Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kit of Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kit of products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Today on Rambling About Cars, it's a BMW bonanza. We're behind the scenes in Munich for the Munich Motor Show and spending a lot of time with BMW looking at all kinds of cool cars, new stuff, old stuff. We got behind the scenes on that. And then, perhaps the greatest virtual cheap car challenge ever. Are you ready, crazy car collectors? Because it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith, Mr. Chris Bruce. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Just real quick, if you're a regular viewer of us, and I've said this 2 weeks ago, and I got reminded by Clint last week to say it again.
Yes.
If you're a regular viewer, please subscribe. If you're not a regular viewer, watch us. If you like us, subscribe at the end.
But like, subscribe, wherever you're at. We want to have you along for the crazy ride.
But tonight we have Jeff Perez with us, and yes. Jeff was in Munich last week along with Clint, but where Clint was doing all Mercedes stuff, Jeff, you were embedded with BMW for about a week, and you're going to kind of tell us a little bit about that. So do you want to give us a little bit of an overview of you, and then we'll dig deeper?
Yeah, well, it's good to be back. I haven't been on the podcast for, what was I on, episode 2 or 3, something like that?
Like too long, man.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
We've got to have more people on. And Jeff, of course, you're our senior editor, and you were over there for like an entire week, right?
I was there for exactly a week. I left on Saturday, and I came back on Saturday. And it's the stereotype is that the German manufacturers and the Korean manufacturers, they typically bring you over to these programs for a week or like 10 days sometimes, and they just march you through, you know, through workshops and slideshows and different things, and then eventually you get to drive a car, maybe. So that's sort of what we did. Obviously, the Munich Auto Show, which they moved from Frankfurt, was the big show that we were there to see. And then, I got to drive some cars. So it was a big, fun, busy week, but glad to be home.
And I think this is interesting because, I mean, Munich, that's BMW headquarters in Munich. And we were talking last week that Mercedes seemed to kind of steal the show at the Munich Motor Show, and there really wasn't a lot going on with BMW, but really
there was something.
There kind of was. I mean, tell us a little bit about some of the cars, some of the things that you were doing with BMW there.
There kind of was. I think you're right in saying that Mercedes stole the show. They had seven cars,
six EVs plus two vehicles.
Yeah. So yeah, Mercedes had a big showing, but BMW had a big concept car that they showed. It's a very little car. The iVision, the iVision Circular is what they called it. And it is a totally recyclable vehicle. So even the battery is, even the battery is recyclable, the body panels, the wheels, the seats, everything. And they use the term circular, quote unquote, instead of recyclable. Which was kind of funny because they said recyclable like 10 times in their presentation, but so they like to use the word circular now, and that's sort of going to be the theme for their EVs going forward. This will never make it to production. You're never going to be able to drive one of these. Looks kind of fun though.
But I don't know. That rear sofa seat, that looks really comfy.
I was going to pull that image up. It just looks like your grandmother's sofa here.
It kind of, I mean, I have some chairs in my living room that kind of, I mean, they're orange. They're not that color pink, but.
They're super cool. They got like a retro vibe.
Yeah, it looks just like, it looks like your grandma's house. It's like this pink velour sofa.
And I think those are like, I could be wrong, but I think they said that the material, like the cloth that they use for those seats, they just pulled from recycled, you know, cloths and different things like that. And they made it into that. They died.
Maybe
their
grandmother passed away. They went to Goodwill. Yeah.
Maybe they did get somebody's like grandmother's furniture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. You know, looks like it.
We're kind of on a little tangent there, but
Well, no, I mean,
circular. I mean, the name circular. I see what they're doing. They're trying to be kind of clever and. Well, everybody uses the term recycle, so we're going to say circular because it has a nice, all-encompassing feel. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the car, and it's like, okay, the wheels are circular, but it's like it's like everything else is like just a straight line going somewhere. There's like no curves on the car. It just seems – I mean, I understand what BMW is doing, but it just seems like a very awkward matchup with circular and then such an angular concept.
Yeah, it's a little odd. I mean, I don't know. BMW is sort of in, I don't want to say no man's land. I think that's a little rude, but they're sort of in a weird transition, like, you know, from gas to EV, and they're trying to figure it out. And, you know, it is what it is. I think,
go ahead. It kind of reminds me of the i3, which, you know, is now gone away, but it kind of reminds me of they took an i3 and they imagined what an i3 would look like in 30 years. And this is kind of that vehicle. Unfortunately, the i3 was never a success, so this probably wouldn't be either. But like you said, they're not going to make it. So,
I mean, at least it doesn't have the bucktooth grill. I mean, it's got a wide grill.
Yeah, it's got a lot of grill.
I mean, I'm okay with the wider grill, but
it's almost like a grill and headlight combo. It's not even two separate things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's neat. It's interesting. I mean, this was kind of the biggest thing that BMW had for the show.
Yeah, that's really it. I mean, they had the iX5 hydrogen, which is not totally new, I don't think, but it's just an X5 with a hydrogen setup. I mean, we saw it.
If I remember correctly, didn't BMW say that there were actually a few of them running around? They were shuttling people around? Like
Munich? They were.
Did you get a chance to go in one?
So they gave us an opportunity to shuttle in one in between going to the BMW Classic Museum. So I kind of went to the museum and didn't shuttle in one. But we got to sit in it and play with it the day prior. And it's an X5, you know. Mm-hmm. It's cool. Like, the powertrain is super cool. And I actually genuinely think hydrogen is a good alternative to EVs and gas.
X5. I'm curious.
I feel like we've had this conversation a few times on Teams.
I got your bag, Jeff, because I'm with you.
Well, I guess I'm alone, but I still disagree.
I think that the infrastructure right now for just charging EVs is still not where it needs to be for mass adoption. And I think if the gas companies really wanted to, they can convert a lot of their gas stations to, or not fully convert, but at least partially convert their gas stations to hydrogen filling stations pretty easily. And I know it's super expensive, but they're gas companies. They have money, you know? So,
right.
And filling up a hydrogen car is as easy as filling up a gas car. You go to the pump, you swipe your card, and in 30 seconds, you're done. So I think that's where I'm at with it. It's definitely not as safe. I think there's still some issues with the hydrogen powertrain in terms of safety. Mm-hmm. But we've come a long way in terms of where it was. So,
I mean, gasoline explodes too, and the lithium ion batteries, if they catch fire, they won't stop. Right. Yeah, I mean, there's danger in everything. Yeah. I'm with you totally. In fact, I go so far as to say, what kind of weird groups conspiracy is happening that's blocking the hydrogen infrastructure from taking off?
Because it's too expensive, dude.
Is there? But come on, mining the ores from the earth to make lithium batteries, that's not expensive.
I'm the wrong person to answer this question. But as far as I know, lithium ion batteries are 80% recyclable, something like that. Like, you can recycle a large amount of it. And you're also, lithium ion batteries aren't going to be the answer forever. Eventually, we're going to hit solid state. We're going to hit something else.
We could just use hydrogen right now, create that electricity, have water as a byproduct, have the infrastructure that we're all familiar with, have refill times in just a few minutes, and be on our way. I mean, it's like, what's holding this up? I feel like there's some group with, you know, their fingers on the puppet string saying, no, we must have electric power. I bet Musk is behind it.
Yeah.
I am not a Musk fan, but I do not he's disagree hoarding, with he's you hoarding, on this point.
He's hoarding all the hydrogen for SpaceX. That's what he's doing.
Well, I think it's the gas companies. I don't know. They have the ability to do it if they want to convert to hydrogen. They just don't. They don't want to because they just keep selling gas.
Here's the thing I always go back to with EVs, and we're kind of on a tangent here, but screw it. This is worth talking about.
We are rambling away now.
Yeah, the thing I always go back to EVs is that everyone can recharge an EV in their own home. Everyone has electricity. Everybody does. You can just go home and plug in your EV.
But you're not always home.
I live in an apartment where I can't do that.
Damn. Yeah.
I mean, sit at a charging station every few days if I got an EV.
I mean, when I heard about the Nissan Leaf lease that was going on, that was like $100 a month. I mean, I was legit like, well, I'll go do this right now because the Mazda, I mean, we were just generally driving that around town. You know, I'll ditch the Mazda. I'll do this Leaf lease. And I've got the Mustang for fun stuff. And then, you know, just buy another secondhand car later on down the road. Or just rent a car if we want to go on trips. But then it dawned on me. It's like, well, if I want to do just a round trip fun run to the Badlands in the Leaf, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's about 60 miles there.
Okay, that's true.
I probably spend about, I don't know, 30, 40 miles just bombing around in the Badlands through the park. And then another 60 miles back. I couldn't do it in the Leaf.
But you're absolutely right. Let me give you the other side of that. And that is my wife's commute is 5 miles a day. A Leaf would be perfect for her.
Yeah.
Because she could go to work and back and still have a ton of charge and have no problem.
Oh, I mean, the Leaf would work for me. And I take the Mustang out to the Badlands anyways. But I need to make sure I have a full tank when I go, because if I don't, I run out. But the point being, there are still a lot of people in a lot of areas.
Yeah, you're right.
Where something, you know, even with a 200 mile range to even 250, like out where I'm at, it is not hard to go 300 miles in just a few hours with 80 mile an hour speed limits out here. And that can be really restricting if you have to try to find a charging spot. And then if for whatever reason you can't charge really that fast, maybe you can only get a little bit of range back in a half an hour. Whereas hydrogen, if we have the hydrogen infrastructure there, it's just like we're used to right now. Only instead of burning gas and sending CO2 up into the air, we're making water for our lattes.
Well, Jeff, before we bore everyone watching this to tears, I need you to show us some old BMWs from the BMW Museum.
Let's get into these older Beamers because, let's be honest, they look a lot better than the new ones.
Oh, God, yes.
Well, let me see if I can pull some of these up. So, yeah, the Classic Museum is, it's not huge, but it is really cool. There's a lot of really cool stuff that you can see there.
And so I think you're finding that. I was at the old BMW Museum before the new one opened. This would have been 04. And it was right across the street from the headquarters building. And it was pretty small, but got to walk through there. And even then it was cool. They have a huge dealer like a couple of blocks away. So my dad and I went there and got a bunch of brochures and stuff of BMWs that we would never see. That was the same time the 1 Series was still under development. We saw 1 Series test mules on the road in Munich.
That's
problems,
cool.
Jeff?
Yeah. I think I got it. I'm trying to open up my folder here.
Well, I think it's very cool that BMW, I mean, they at least wanted to get you in and show you some of their history.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I couldn't imagine going to Munich for a week on BMW's dime and not having them do a little bit of their history. I mean, were they keen on really talking about their history, their previous cars, or were they just kind of like, yeah, here's what we've done, now come look at this other stuff?
They were. Yeah, well, so BMW, like I said, BMW's in a weird space where they sort of don't have a good identity right now. They're super proud of their old stuff. Like, this is a great M3 that was at the museum. Yep, like,
we got
super clean.
For anyone who is not watching on YouTube, we got a yellow E36 M3. Yeah. We've got it's just a regular E30 in a gorgeous shade of gray left to the left of it. I see a Z1 in green with the doors down above it on a little thing, and I can't
That's a Safari concept that they made in the late 90s, which is pretty cool, but it is it's a Z4 base actually.
And that's going to
Yeah.
That looks like a Z1 to me, but okay.
Well, they did the Z1 doors, I think.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was a weird little concept they made.
And that's their actual museum, because it just looks like a
garage.
Nice garage.
It looks like a garage. Yeah, no, that's the museum.
I mean, nothing wrong with that. I dig the ambiance.
That's a Mercedes. That's another BMW we'll probably talk about.
We can pull up that story if you want it sometime.
You want to talk about this?
Let's talk about
is a BMW Welt, which is not not at the actual museum, but it is at their like modern museum, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they had all the new cars, the 2 Series, 4 Series Grand Coupe, and then they had this weird minty M4, which was super, super cool. It was part of their, so they do the new individual customization stuff. And they have a bunch of new colors now. I think it's over 100 colors you could pick for the exterior of your M cars. And that mint green was on display, and it was very cool. Bronze wheels, full carbon fiber package. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, so, and again, for anyone who's not watching on YouTube, we're listening to the audio version. We're looking at the modern BMW M4 with the massive grills, but it's in this, like Jeff said, like it looks like toothpaste green is the best way to what's best way I can describe it. And it's got bronze wheels, and is the wing bronze, like bronze tinted carbon fiber?
No, I think it was regular carbon fiber. It's hard to see. I think it's just a shadow.
It's hard to see in the light.
Yeah. But I think it's just regular carbon fiber, and then you got the bronze wheels.
I don't
wheels
know. Look, if you guys are looking, that looks like it's got a little bit of a tint to it, but
it might. Yeah.
Anyway,
I gotta take off my tinted glasses to take a look. Maybe it does have a little bit of a tint. Look at that.
It might, yeah.
It's good looking. I can't believe it's good looking.
Just don't show the front of it.
Right. No. Let me clarify. I like the wheels. I like the color. I don't like the car. But
it's an interesting shade. I don't hate it. I mean, I don't know if I like it.
And then here in the front, I'm intrigued under the bright lights. It's almost a teal blue.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm intrigued by it. The wheels.
I love the wheels. You don't like them?
They look like they came from a 77 Trans Am, man. I gotta say,
they do. They're not that bad.
They look like those wheels are nice. Like the snowflake wheels, the snowflake wheels on the second gen Trans Ams. I mean, they kind of look like that.
You can get that color on any M car too. So you can get like an X6M in that color, which would be insane.
I mean, the combo, here's where I get a little confused, because I'm not sure how I feel about the minty green. But for some reason, the combo with the gold wheels really works. And I don't generally like gold wheels on anything other than a blue Subaru. but it kind of works, as long as we don't look at the front. Because, we don't need to look at this picture too long.
Those nostrils are.
It's not just the big grill. It's all the contrasting angles that they have up front with that fascia.
Yeah.
It's like, well, which design theme should we go for?
All of them.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Let's put them all in there. So let's just keep looking at it from the side. Now,
so Jeff, I know you got to drive this that I'm putting up now, and you can't give us any impressions on it, which I totally understand. But this is the iX. But we can at least, while you can't say what it was like to drive, maybe you can like blink in Morse code and tell us, but you can at least run down the specs of it.
Yeah,
that's fair, because we have a story here. In fact, I wrote it.
Yeah, so over 500 horsepower is what they say. I think the exact number is like 526, something like that.
So I have it here 560, or at least that's for the M version. So probably for the regular 5 something. Yeah.
Yep.
Over 300 miles of range. Super, super fancy new interior that they've done. You know, I think you can see with your eyes what it looks like because it's not good looking.
It's well, I mean, again, it's not bad from the side.
Here's the inside. That interior looks fine in pictures. You're telling me that maybe in real life it's not quite that good?
Oh, no, I think the interior is great in pictures. I don't know if I can tell you how it looks in person.
Okay, fair.
It looks phenomenal in pictures.
Okay.
And I think I can say that the iX does look better in person than it does in pictures.
Okay.
It's hard because you just see those pictures and you see that nose with those with the giant kidneys, and you sort of overlook everything else. But when you really like get close to it and see all the details, it feels and like a really complete design. Like they really, really thought about it, and it's really nice in person. The wheels are cool. You can get some cool wheel options. You can get like the M Performance wheels. The blue
here for the folks.
Yeah, the blue accents do not come to the US, which I thought was interesting.
Oh,
that's only for Europe. Yeah, it looks better without the blue accents, I think. And then the grill. So that grill is totally flush. Like it has no like the little diamond patterns. They're not. It's like a screen printed on almost.
Oh,
so it's kind of it's weird because they hide it hides the new radar system behind it.
Huh.
So yeah, they wanted to just make it a flat.
In pictures, it looks three dimensional, but
yeah. Yeah, no, it's totally flat, and it hides the radar behind it, and then it has a very good drag coefficient. So that's
now that's interesting because when you look at it, you would think that it wouldn't, but I mean that's why
from the side it does kind of look like a brick.
That's why engineers make the big bucks, because I would look at it and say, oh, it's kind of a brick. Look at that big flat front end, but
yeah, I don't know if they've confirmed the drag coefficient number yet, so I won't say it out loud, but it's very good.
Cool.
So yeah.
And
I guess I don't understand. Well, I do understand. BMW's big grill is their new design language right now. But when you have an EV like this, it's just like,
why?
Why?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. I don't know. I don't think. I think at this point, BMW has so much history with that design that they can't just not do it. You know,
the kidney grill is fine, but it doesn't need to be that big.
Oh yeah. Like, oh, I know.
As an example. You were sharing this photo with us.
Yep.
That's not a big kidney grill. That looks fantastic.
Although, technically, you could say it goes pretty much from the top to the bottom.
It's
just
vertical.
A much
skinny.
It's just a much, much shorter area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
No, TSL. I mean, the longer, deeper kidneys, I mean, that's part of BMW's deeper history. Jeff...
Wait. For our audio listeners, we need to tell them what we're looking at here, because otherwise they're not going to know.
Sorry. Yeah.
There's a CSL. I don't know what year it is.
3.0?
My BMW hit.
CSL.
Yeah, that's like a mid-70s, I think.
So yeah, I mid to so. Late 70s, like a mid, 77 mid-late maybe. 70s,
yeah.
It's pretty, then, whatever it is.
Yeah, we got a Z8 to the left of it and a very nice color of red.
Yeah, really nice Z8. They had a lot of pre-war stuff in there, too.
Oh,
to go back to the, I don't know if I have a lot of pictures of those, but to go back to the massive grills, like the pre-war stuff is like top to bottom, like from the hood line all the way down to the bumper. And it's so funny that everyone complains now about how big the grills are. And then you look at that early stuff and you're like, oh, they were huge back then too.
Yeah, and but anyone watching this on something with either a large screen or can zoom in the back, you can see a 2002 turbo back there. Mm-hmm. You can tell from the stripes and stuff. And that's a lot of cool stuff.
Is that an Isetta back there too that I see?
Yeah,
that is a tail of an Isetta. Yeah, good eye.
Yep.
Yeah, look at that. I'll so how many cars do they have at somewhere. How many cars do they have at their museum?
A lot. The museum itself isn't that big, but they kind of cram them in really close together. Like you can see how close these two are together. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's like every car that's in there. And they have some mini stuff in the back. They didn't have any like Rolls Royce stuff. I want to say they have a separate thing with Rolls Royce somewhere, but it was cool. Yeah. There was just a lot of really cool cars. They had some cool concepts on there too. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other photos you want to share with us before we move on to comments?
There was one more that I had in that folder, and I'm going to just open this folder real quick. pictures of mountains.
Yeah, just to let you know, you are sharing that right now.
I know.
BMW just, sensitive in there.
No, this is just all the pictures I took from Munich. Is that M3 again? No, I'd have to go. I'll have to upload them somewhere eventually with all my pictures.
Honestly, if you could do it before Friday, and maybe we could show anyone who reads the post, that could be a nice little teaser.
I'll put it on the post.
You can see Jeff's BMW photos, BMW museum photos.
We can drop them in there. I want to ask one more thing here before we move on.
Sure.
And hopefully this isn't putting you on the spot at all. I mean, you spent a week with BMW in there, and obviously you weren't the only one. There was quite a few other journalists there as well. There's certainly a lot of controversy right now with some of BMW's design language, particularly not just with the big grille, but some of the things we've been talking about as well, like just with the contrasting lines and the angles. Is BMW aware of all of this controversy, do you think? Were you able to kind of feel them out at all, or was there some discussion that's just kind of talking a little bit about, okay, you know, BMW, you have to know that there are a lot of people that are kind of scratching their heads right now. I mean, is there a response that they have to this?
Oh, BMW absolutely knows what they're doing. And their lead designer, I think, has said it in a number of interviews that their goal isn't to make pretty cars necessarily. Their goal is to make cars that people will talk about. And I don't know if I agree with him.
I think as a designer, your goal should be to make pretty cars, but okay.
I always approach it from this angle. Where it's, you know, you ever watch like high end fashion shows and you're like, man, who would ever wear that? Like, no one in their right mind would ever wear that. But everybody's talking about it. Everybody's looking at it. Everybody thinks that it's cool. I think that's sort of where BMW's at. Like, they want people to talk about it. They don't care if everybody thinks it looks good or if just one person thinks it looks good. As long as people are talking about it, especially now with social media, like, everybody sharing those pictures or commenting on those pictures, that's just a recipe for, I don't know if it's a recipe for success, but it's a recipe for people to talk about their cars. And if you look on our Instagram channel, on Moto1.com Instagram, BMW always does well with our followers. I don't know why. I mean, there's a lot of comments about negative, you know, design, but people like those cars.
Yeah, I guess. The conclusion that I come to is, if you are making money off the amount of people that are talking about you, that's great. But the fashion analogy, these designers will do some elaborate, crazy design that they'll have to put on the model to walk down the runway. And it's like, who would ever wear that? Well, nobody's going to wear that, but that designer's name is going to be on their lips. And now people are going to go to that designer to look at the stuff that they will wear.
Right.
Whereas BMW, hey, we want people talking about our crazy outlandish vehicles. Okay. So we'll go to BMW to buy the car that we actually want to drive. And they all kind of look the same. You know,
you could say like the M3, people will see the M3 online and say, oh man, that's not good. But I do like BMW, so let me go to the dealership and see what they got. You're like, okay, maybe a regular 3 Series.
That's what's going through my mind, is that, yeah, the old adage, as long as they're talking about you, regardless what they're saying, that there's a point to that. But I wonder if we're moving past that in the modern world.
Yeah.
And things can eventually turn negative enough that they're just not going to come in and look. And I wonder and worry whether BMW is getting near that point.
Do you want to hear my conspiracy theory on all of this?
Hell yes.
We love it.
Hell yes.
So you know the new Coke strategy, right?
Allegedly, but yes, I do.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Do it. So yeah. Tell us.
New Coke was, you know, we're going to release this new Coke flavor, a new Coke recipe. And
oh, you're talking about soft drink. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Smith was around in the 70s. He knows about the new Coke.
Yeah. So, yeah, the new Coke idea was we'll release a new Coke with a new recipe, and people are going to hate it. This is how the conspiracy theory goes. People are going to hate it. So then we can actually release the new version we want to release that's still slightly worse than the original, but not as bad as New Coke.
Right. We do Coca-Cola Classic, which I'm just about to turn 36. For anyone who is around that age, you will remember throughout the 90s, it was called Coca-Cola Classic.
Coca-Cola Classic.
Right. Yep.
And that's why.
Yeah, that is why.
I think auto manufacturers have a similar strategy sometimes. I have no evidence to support this. This is a conspiracy theory, like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster. I think that BMW is going all out in the most ridiculous way that they can, and then they're going to pull it back and they're going to release something that's different in the next iteration. And it might not be as good as the classic BMWs, because I think the problem is everyone expects them to live up to those classic cars. Like, they want them to be as pretty as the classic cars, which they're never going to be. So maybe it's like, okay, let's do something so outlandish that when the next generation rolls around, they're going to be better looking, but there's no way they're going to be as good as the classics. So sort of temper expectations a little bit. That's my theory, at least.
That's a damn very it, Jeff, good theory.
I think you might be right. And that here is why.
Very, very good theory.
No.
If that's a conspiracy theory, man, I got to hear your regular theories, because I mean, that's a really good regular theory.
So, and I'm going to share this right now.
We go a little wild.
Been seeing spy shots of the new BMW 5 Series, and I want folks to look. You'll notice there's no sign of a big grill. In fact, it looks shorter and wider than what we're currently seeing. Skinny headlights. It's basically the exact opposite of what we've been seeing from the 4 Series and the new M3.
Mm-hmm. Even the X7 spy photos we've seen are like radically different than any other BMW we've ever seen.
You might have a point here.
Or it could be that BMW is listening and saying, oops.
Yeah.
Or that's true too.
You know, but hey, either way, keep it nice and subtle.
Yeah.
I'm down with that. Jeff, one other quick thing. Since you were at the Munich Motor Show, because this was kind of the first big international legit show really since COVID started. I mean, there was the show in China last year, but that really wasn't
that was
they didn't have quite the same international
in
status
the same way
that the show in Germany does. Can you tell us a little bit about just the environment, the feel? Because there have been a lot of people questioning whether or not major auto shows like this even make sense in the 21st century, when automakers can hold their own reveals of live streaming over the internet and reach every single person with a phone or a computer in the entire world, versus spending thousands, or more accurately, tens of thousands of dollars to go to these shows.
Hundreds of thousands.
If not hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, with this being the first major show, what was kind of your impression about the future of big shows?
I think for the past few years, we've been sort of tapering off of auto shows a little bit. I think some manufacturers like Porsche and, I'm trying to think of others, but I think Porsche was one of the big ones that was like, we don't need to do auto shows. There's no point. You know, we can just release it online. We have our customers already. We can call them and say, hey, look at our new car, come buy it. And they'll go buy it. You know, it doesn't make sense for them to spend that much money for a return that is probably very little. I don't know how many people have ever gone to an auto show and bought a car, or like if there's even a way to track how many people go to a show and then go directly to a dealership and buy a car. So it was kind of weird to be back with COVID and everything. The show was super safe in terms of you needed to wear an FFP92, I think it was called, mask. It's the same as like a KN95 mask. You had to be vaccinated. And they really limited a lot of things, like BMW's booth. I think they only limited 100 people at a time, which sounds like a lot, but their booth was humongous, so it really wasn't that much. So they did a good job in terms of keeping people safe as much as they could, and trying to just do the auto show as normal. But it still felt weird. It was still weird. I still think that auto shows are sort of a dying breed, and there's very little reason to even do them outside of you know, if you want to show your cool concept to customers, but even then you can do that online. So.
Okay. Very interesting. And I mean, there is something to be said for seeing a vehicle in person versus photos. I mean, the manufacturer photos that we get, they're taken at just the right angle with just the right light to make them look a certain way. But yeah, great insight, and glad you had a safe trip. A week in Germany. I've been to Canada. I've not been outside of the United States or Canada, so a little jealous there. But but man, those trips are never. They tend to be glamorous sometimes, or they can sound glamorous, but there's a lot of work that goes into those trips.
It is. It's a lot of work. I mean, there's. It's a free trip to Europe. You know, I can't understate that. Like, there's no world where that's not awesome, you know? But it is a lot of work. We did a lot of workshops. We watched a lot of PowerPoints and we did a lot of tours of the factory and this and that. And it was a week of, you know, very intricate stuff in terms of what BMW wanted to show us with their new vehicles, you know, the iX and the i4. So, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, at the same time, there's a lot of journalists that are there and you get to drink with them and eat schnitzel and have a good time in between that. So, yeah.
Well, we can't wait to see your driving impressions. I mean, those drive articles will be coming up probably within the next month or so, I'm assuming. So, folks listening out there, you want to keep an eye on MotorOne.com for Jeff's take on that. Bruce, what else we got here?
Well, I think it's time to move to comments. We had comments this week from YouTube and on the website. We didn't get any email comments this week. So podcast@motorone.com. If you ever want to contact us, we love getting it there. But if you just want to comment on YouTube or on the post, that's fine, too. Smith, would you please read? Do you have the outline up?
I do. I have comments right here.
Cool. Would you read the one from Elric since he mostly addresses it to you?
I can certainly read that one, and I appreciated the comments, and I appreciated the fact that it kind of harked back to when Clint was on the show just a few weeks before last week. So yep. Elric says, love the episode, gents. It's great to have Clint back. Yes. It's also great to have Jeff back. I wish we could have you two on together tonight. I know Clint's super busy out.
Yeah, Clint was busy. Yeah,
but yeah, you guys together just makes for an epic podcast. It makes for an epic pretty much anything. So, Clint, we miss you. We'll have you back soon. Elric writes, feels that his opinions are mostly the exact opposite of Mr. Smith's. Well, that's because he was born in a much, much younger generation that just doesn't get us older guys. So, I suppose it works there a little bit, which makes it fun. Listen, when those two start rambling about cars. Yeah, we have some good takes. Clint's a great guy. Totally. I agree with your take on the new WRX. Subarus always had a mild look to them, hoping that they would make a two-door STI. But I know this is wishful thinking, especially now with the BRZ in Subaru's lineup. You're not wrong there. Mm-hmm. Mr. Smith said that some people react to electric cars in a similar fashion as the late 1800s when people saw cars for the first time. It was actually worse. They used to call them the devilish devil wagons, and it wasn't uncommon to read newspaper headlines about them. Keep up the great work. Thank you for another entertaining episode. Elric, I'm assuming you weren't around in the late 1800s. If you were, we need to talk about your secrets.
Yeah. Are you a vampire? Because if so, we need to talk.
Because I totally want to be rocking the world in like 2150. That's my plan thus far. Yeah, you know, I appreciate the comments.
That's 30 years from now. I think you can make it.
2155?
2150. I'm sorry. Okay, you're right.
Ladies
right.
and gentlemen, that's why Mr. Bruce writes instead of ads.
Yes, exactly.
That's okay. But no, thanks for the comments. Yeah, I totally feel like the reactions right now to electric cars. It's the same thing whenever something new comes around. Jeff, you were even alluding to it earlier with BMW. People always they hold up the new cars to the classics. You know what? Embrace what we have. See the benefits that they offer. Except that big grill. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Bruce, you want to jump in on a comment here, or I can read another one here.
No. I got the next two here real quick.
Okay.
So Corey, he agreed with you. The interior looks nicer. He's referring to the new Silverado, mm-hmm. but the front end looks like they're trying to make it uglier on purpose. I still don't mind. I didn't mind it before. I don't mind it now. It's the worst of the big three. I would put Ram, Ford, Chevy in my order. But I still think it's fine. I don't think it's so egregiously ugly, but everyone disagrees with me, so that's fine.
Jeff, what do you think about the new Silverado? Well, not new, the refreshed Silverado. Silverado.
Yeah,
I think it looks better. I mean, I thought that truck was ugly as sin, the original. I think I had some angry comments on my review about.
I think I remember that. I mean, I think it looks better, but it's still.
The worst of the big three, but I don't find it egregiously ugly. That's my opinion. Yeah.
Fair.
Anyway, next comment is from Hengsha. I'm going to guess that's pronounced.
Hengsha. I think that's right.
So the WRX used to compete against the Mustang. Now it has less power than a Camry or Civic. It needed to gain at least 50 horsepower to be relevant. If the new STI doesn't break 400 HP from the factory, it will be DOA. It's not going to break 400 horsepower from the factory. I think if you get 370, we're going to be lucky. And also, I did look up his thing. So, no, it doesn't make as much of the current Civic, but he is right that a V6 Camry has 301 horsepower, 267 pound-feet of torque. So a V6 Camry has more horsepower than the new WRX. Horsepower is not everything.
Right, but that's not fair.
About to say that.
Okay.
I was going to make – he's technically right on a numbers point of view, but – we're comparing an all-wheel drive, much smaller, much more nimble vehicle against a large front-wheel drive family sedan. He's technically right just on the numbers point of view, but I don't think it's a fair comparison because the WRX even still is going to be a better handling vehicle than a Camry. But it is kind of sort of sad that a Camry has more horsepower than a WRX.
I can't even try to look at it that way.
Okay.
I mean, the guys up on the north side of town that have the trucking company with their big Peterbilts have like 400 or 500 horsepower.
You're right.
Ooh,
you're
does
right.
that mean the Peterbilt is going to just romp all over the WRX? No, you're it doesn't. Right. Come on.
Okay. I can Come respect
on.
That.
Come on.
What's with all the WRX hate by everybody? I like it. It looks great.
It looks the same,
Jeff,
which is fine, but it looks the same.
Oh, Jeff.
Listen,
I was actually defending it a little bit last week because it gained 3 horsepower, but it's how you use that power, and the Rex uses the power pretty decent.
It's a great car.
It's just kind of
talk about this, bud. I put this in the post in the podcast last week. The BRZ, which mm-hmm. we both know is naturally aspirated, it also went from a 2.0 to a 2.4 liter engine. It went from 205 to 228 horsepower and 156 pound feet to 184 pound feet. So the WRX, which is naturally aspirated, gained horsepower and torque. Somehow the same displacement increase for the WRX resulted in 3 horsepower.
Yeah. Well,
but wait a minute. The BRZ, what engine is in the BRZ again?
I think it's the FA24. It's just not the T, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a lot there's a big difference between the WRX and the BRZ, though, in terms of weight and power transfer and whatever.
I'm talking pure. My point is that the BRZ and the WRX had the same displacement increase for their latest generations. Mm-hmm. The BRZ increased both horsepower and torque by a moderate margin. I'm not even going to call it significant. However, the WRX gained 3 horsepower and no torque. You're not going to convince me otherwise on this.
I don't have an argument. I mean, I don't know. Maybe because the STI still exists. Maybe they want to still like separate them enough, but
bam.
I don't know.
Bam. It's not just the displacement. It's not just the power. It's how you use it. If you have a bigger engine and you just pick up just a couple more horsepower, that engine isn't going to have to work as hard to be just as much fun as the previous generation. The power band's going to be different, so you're going to get that power hitting at you in different spots.
You're right.
And yes, it leaves more room to go further.
But not from the factory. You're going to have to go to the aftermarket, and that means waiting for your warranty to run out before you can do that.
Until Subaru comes out with their Subaru WRX GT
they RSR. Came out with the GT trim. That's the new one. The GT's the new one.
Yes. So in a year, they'll come out with the WRX GT RSRV that has 280 horsepower. And then
when they do that, I'll be happy with it.
And then they'll turn up the boost a little bit more. It won't cost them anything extra. And then 6 months down the road, they'll have the WRX GT TZP spec that'll have 290 horsepower. It's a money making machine, man.
You want to hear an awful take?
Yeah.
Yes.
I hope the new
this whole show is an awful take.
I hope the new STI finally gets the CVT. That'd be sweet.
Oh, God.
Wait. No. Hold up. Subaru doesn't make a CVT. It's now called SPT.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Subaru whatever Performance it is. Transmission. No.
It's pretty good.
It upshifts, I think, 50% quicker. It downshifts 30% quicker. I mean, it doesn't shift
Explain
at all.
Explain to me how that, yeah.
It's a CVT. Yeah. A CVT in the STI. You know, I mean, like the... The theory of a CVT is amazing.
Yeah.
Let's take the engine, spin it up, keep it right in the heart of its power band where it needs to stay,
yes,
and just leave it there.
Yeah, it works fantastic on snowmobiles. It works fantastic on ATVs. It's just the fact that as displacement grows and as horsepower grows, it's very hard to make that reliable.
Well, and I think it also has to do with the fact that cars with CVTs where it just holds the RPM, that kind of sound like a leaf blower to a lot of people, if I'm honest. And it just stays there, and it's like, oh my God, what's my car doing? No, so that's what it's supposed to do, but hey.
Okay. Well, let's go from negativity to positivity and let's have some fun, shall we?
Oh, you think this is going to be positive? Okay.
I found some positive results.
Okay, well, let's set people up because we're doing one of our virtual cheap car challenges here. But usually it's just me and Bruce. But today we have Jeff. Now, Jeff, you've been passively aggressively looking at buying a car for
since I've known you for years.
Which I'm kind of the same way. I've been passively aggressively looking at cars. So, Jeff, we turn to you for some criteria for a cheap car challenge. Why don't you tell the listeners what we're going after here today?
Well, my problem with shopping for a new car or used car is that I'm often paralyzed by choice. There's so many cars that I like and so many segments that I like. But one of the segments that I tend to go back to a lot are hatchbacks, especially used, like hot hatchbacks. Not necessarily hot hatchbacks, but a lot of times hot hatchbacks. And if you can get them for under 10 grand, I think that's a steal for a decent hot hatchback. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what we're going to look at.
Yeah.
Okay. So hot hatchbacks. Well, hatchbacks, right? They don't necessarily have to be hot.
Correct.
Hatchback under $10,000.
And we put in the stipulation, no wagons.
No wagons. No wagons. To be a traditional five-door.
I hate you guys.
Or three-door.
Because
yes.
A half mile from me is like a 1983 or 1984 Oldsmobile like Vista Cruiser.
That's not like a hatchback.
Woody Wagon.
No.
Actually, maybe you're right. Maybe it has the barn door on the back. I want it.
Okay. Jeff, as our guest, you have your links up first and I'll share them, or do you want one of us to go first?
Should I do one at a time or should I do both?
Oh, yeah, we're going to do one at a time. Yeah.
Okay.
One at a time.
My first one is a little obscure, and I know a lot of people don't love this car, but now you can get them for under 10 grand. They're super reliable. They're a lot of fun to drive. You might not know it, but they are a lot of fun to drive. And you can get the factory supercharger kit for these, the HPD kit, and they are awesome with that.
You went with a Honda CR-Z.
I was going to pick this. So
Honda CRZ.
Honda CRZ.
I want to hate it, but I can't.
No, I always wanted one of these. I like these cars.
They're super cool. The CVT sucks in this because it is an older, I mean, 2011 or 2010 was the first year for this car, or maybe earlier than that.
It's earlier.
I think so. But the manual in this car is awesome. And if you get the supercharger, so much fun. And you can get these for under 10 grand for with, I'm looking at this one, 92,000 miles for under 10 grand. I mean, it's a Honda. It's going to last forever. So
Now you're based in Florida, correct?
Yep, I'm in Florida.
So the nearest one here on this list looks like is in Greensboro, North Carolina, because we try to stay within a day's drive.
Okay, I didn't do that. But here's one in Knoxville for $8,950. That's not too far. 112,000 miles.
You can get there in a day.
Yeah. Let's see.
Don't worry, I'm gonna stretch the rules. So it is
not you go. Smith always stretch, but he is from South Dakota. You are from the Miami area though. They should be
There should be
not too uncommon around you.
No, I've seen a few near me. Here's one. Arcadia, Florida. $5,000. 174,000 miles. See, that's a fun car if you just want a like second or third car to just tool around on. You
put that would be a very good on third it. Car.
Yeah. I think it'd be a great little project.
Yeah.
I want to hate on it, but I can't. I dig the CRZ. I dig this. Just the smallness of it.
It looks so cool too. I love the styling. Cool.
Yeah.
It's decent on gas, obviously.
Yeah, because it's a hybrid. So
yeah,
it's gonna do great on gas.
This blue is a good color too. I don't remember.
One of the few
hybrids
you can get with a manual transmission.
Yeah. So yeah.
Honestly, like I said, I nearly picked one of these, but I found something else I wanted instead. So
wow.
No fight for me.
Okay. I'm impressed. Right. I mean, I kind of don't have anything else to say there.
Yeah.
Spruce,
you mind if I go next? Because
I was going to say, why don't you go ahead and go next?
Okay. It's loading now on my end. So before I
mean, if we stick to the track record,
you and I are going to pick exactly the same car.
If we pick the same car on this one, I'm going to be searching my house for the secret cameras that are installed.
2016 Ooh. Ford Fiesta ST. It's almost too expensive. $9,899. Wow. It is in Streetsboro, Ohio, which is not too far from my parents' house, which is why I considered it valid. 140,000 miles, which is a lot of miles, but who cares? Six-speed manual.
You're under 10 grand. I didn't realize that those were down under 10 grand.
No, me neither. A friend of mine just sold his on Bring a Trailer or Cars and Bids for a good amount. I didn't know they were that cheap, though.
More than 10,000?
Way more than 10,000. Yeah, okay. almost what he bought it new, but it had 20-something thousand miles.
It's worth pointing out that used car prices are so bonkers right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I was running into that just this evening when I was trying to search up some of my choices.
Same, which is why when I saw that this is the only Fiesta ST I found in the northern Ohio, because I searched both northwestern and northeastern Ohio areas. This
you're
is search, the only
you're
one
searching,
I saw.
You're searching northwestern, northeast Ohio.
Yeah.
I'm searching like western United States, Midwest.
Like I said, it's got 160,000 miles, but if you look at the images, it looks to be in good condition. I don't see any 140,000 miles. I don't see significant wear on the seats. It doesn't look that bad. Like, I wouldn't be afraid of at least going and test driving this thing. And for under 10 grand.
Yeah.
It looks neat. And I know they're fun to drive, but I've driven the Fiestas before and I just never really liked how they felt inside. I never really got comfortable in the seats. And I mean, I'm a short guy and I just felt really cramped.
Did you drive an ST?
I didn't drive an ST. It was just the regular Fiesta. But I mean, that feeling of just being cramped is going to
It's going to be a tight car. Like it is what it is. Like it's going to be a tight car.
Yep.
But if you want a hot hatch for under 10K and you don't mind it being a little bit tiny, Fiesta STs, apparently, if you shop around, maybe you can find one. Maybe this is the only one in the country, for all I know. But there's one out there. And if you live near Streetsboro, go get this one.
I mean, the The interior is super nice for that much mileage. I mean, I'm surprised. I guess people are scared of the engine, but I mean, I don't. It's a Ford. I don't know. It won't.
Well, I don't think I'd be afraid. Like,
I mean, right? I would need to. That's a car. That's like my typical. Okay, you need to shop the buyer or the previous owner as much as the car.
Yeah, for, this one's at a dealer though, so you have no idea.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. So, I mean, okay. Was the car driven pretty hard, which not a big deal, but was the car driven pretty hard and then instantly shut off? Because even with the newer turbos, it's still a good idea to let the car idle for a little bit. Otherwise, you get the hot oil sitting in the turbos. It just cooks them. I mean, that's one with that kind of miles. I would really need to know more about the seller to feel really
I would certainly feel comfortable going to test. I wouldn't be afraid to test drive it. Like, you know, maybe you test drive it and it's a bucket of bolts and you don't buy it, but you know, maybe it's okay.
It's a hot hatch. It fits the criteria.
That's right.
And it's very close to you. I can't really, you guys aren't giving me good ammo here.
All right.
In that same vein though, you can get a Focus ST for under 15, about the same mileage. Those are good too.
We talked about this.
10 was I know 10 was I know, but I like the Focus too.
Oh no, I would take a Focus ST over the Fiesta, but 10 was the number.
Not for under 10. Yeah.
No, you're not for under 10. Smith, your turn.
Okay, well, this is technically a hatchback.
Oh, I almost picked one of these.
Really?
Is it a Celica?
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
I mean, not that there's anything wrong with a Celica, I should say. But, I mean, just suspend your disbelief because this is technically a hatchback.
Oh, man.
the back window, I mean, it looks like there's a trunk back there.
You're not. Wrong, in a technical sense.
The whole thing lifts up there in the back. This is a 1998 Pontiac Firebird Trans Am.
Those are cool.
Beautiful cars. Red color. Come on, that's a good looking car. That is a hot looking muscle car. I really wanted a WS6, but you're going to pay $20,000 for a WS6.
Yeah.
This is in Plainfield, Illinois, which I know like I can get there
in
one day. I mean, it's probably like a 13 or 14 hour drive to get that far.
Okay.
I've done it in a day before.
Okay.
So, I mean, technically it's West Chicagoland Craigslist. It's a suburb of Chicago. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it looks pretty good. It's done 189,000 miles.
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Well, no, I mean, on a Chevy sourced V8, like that's
189,000 miles on a 90s GM product. I love this car, and that makes me nervous.
Okay,
but I mean, it looks good. I mean, come
on,
can you do much better than a red Trans Am? And I've always wanted one of these fourth gens. Mm-hmm. That's fourth gen, first two.
You're right.
Yeah, fourth gen. I've always wanted one of these fourth gens. The WS6s are still, I mean, they're collector's cars at this point. And these are starting to become collector's
very
cars with some collector value.
Yes.
Searching around, I mean, there is some wear there on the seat. And it is the automatic. I'd rather have the manual. And, okay, admittedly, I hate these 90s GM interiors. That's possibly one of the worst interiors of all time. I feel like the buttons, I feel like the buttons on the stereo, the controls, I feel like they come from like play school. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the sound, that's a 98. So that's going to be an LS1 V8 in that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the worst part of this car, right?
What?
Is the mullet I would have to grow to drive it?
Well, yeah, that too. Well, the fact that it's not a hatchback at all. And that's a hill I'm going to die on, because when people call sedans or two doors hatchbacks just because the little thingy lifts up in the back, it's not a hatchback. It's a fastback or sportback.
Not entirely wrong.
The whole thing lifts up. That's a hatch. That's a hatch. The Fox Body Mustangs through the 80s, they were called hatchbacks.
Is the Kia Stinger a hatchback? Thing.
Yes.
No.
I would absolutely call it a hatchback. Is my Mazda a hatchback?
Isn't it called liftback, which is kind of sort of
you look up my 2004 Mazda 6S 5-door and it's listed as a hatchback.
Fair.
Okay. I guess.
It's got a hatchback there that it's a different design, but it's technically a hatchback.
I guess.
Jeff, pick number 2.
All right. I have a real hatchback.
Come on.
Let's see. It is a Fiat 500 Abarth.
Yeah, I found a few of these.
Few of those. This is the only one that I could find close that was under 10 grand, and it's a little bit rough, but they're pretty much everywhere. If you look, you can find them under 10 grand. They usually have 100 and something thousand miles, but these are amazing cars. They're just so much fun to fling around.
Am I looking at that right? This has 67,000?
It does. The exterior looks like it's in a little rough shape, though. So, yeah, 10 grand for 67,000.
They had like a NACA duct to the front?
This is
on the left-hand side?
So this is a special edition, I guess.
Oh.
It says Cavallino on it, though. I don't know off the top of my head that we ever had a Cavallino edition.
I think Cavallino might be like the dude that owned
it
previously.
It has official badging though, unless he got
look at that badging. Look at that roof spoiler. Oh my god.
That
would look big on a Civic Type R.
Yeah.
That is on the roof of a Fiat 500. I want to be a little snarky, but that'd be a lot of car. That would be a lot of fun ass car for under 10 grand.
Yeah,
these are great.
And I don't think it looks that bad on the outside.
No, it's got some weird additions, but I wouldn't, you know, it's not that bad.
No.
Well, I mean, it's a Fiat 500. Just own it.
Yeah.
And it's in a Barth. So, I mean, it's going to have some mojo behind it.
Where is that one
located? Hollywood, Florida.
This is Hollywood. Yeah, it's close to me.
Okay.
You should go get it, man.
Well, I don't know. I can't do that small.
Real quick here. This is not my pick, but I will share it because it's the one I found. So if you live in Ohio, you can pay $1,000 less and own one for same year, 2013 Fiat 500 Abarth, 89,995. This one's got a little bit more miles, 93,000 miles, but not a lot more. But yeah, they're out there for under 10 grand.
Yeah. No, or if you can find a 500E electric Fiat 500. Those are good too.
Those are mostly going to be on the West Coast.
Yeah. West Coast, yeah.
That's the thing. Okay, my turn.
All right, number two.
I'm going to go super quick here because I actually have two that I want to show off because one is my real pick and one is if you would let me have a cheater pick would be my pick. So real pick, you were talking about the Nissan Leaf earlier. Here's a 2012 Nissan Leaf for $7,000. And look at this. It has 11,000 miles on it.
Wow.
How is that possible? You can buy a $7,000 car with 11,000 miles.
I don't know. People don't like the Leaf, I guess.
I mean, a lot of people don't. In that generation Leaf, you're only getting, I think, like 90 or 100 miles worth of range max.
It would have to be a third car for my.
Yeah, it doesn't have fast charge capability.
No.
So, I mean, it's going to take a while to charge it back up. I mean, that's why it's down on that far down on price. That's a car where you have to be prepared before you buy it.
Right.
You have to understand that you're just going to drive it around locally. It's never going to go on any trips. And even locally, you're going to have to be a little careful because if you run it down, you're not going to be able to get it to a quick charger and zoom it back up.
You're absolutely right. But it fulfills all of the, guys, I got something in my eye and I keep rubbing it. It fulfills everything on the assignment. It is less than $10,000. Yeah. It is low miles. It would be a perfect third car if I needed a third car. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say that's also a great car for like your elderly mother or grandmother and just drive to the grocery store and back $7,000.
Honestly, I think it's very tempting. I think it's very tempting indeed if you understand you're just sticking around town with it.
Yeah. Here's my cheater choice, though. 2013 Volvo C30 T5 with the cool wheels. It is $10,500. I would bet you I could offer this guy $9,800 and he would take it. And let's just go through the pictures. Other good wheels, black on black. I always like these cars.
Those are cool.
I love
that backside. It's always kind of unnerving.
No, it looks like an 1800 ES.
No, it doesn't.
And it's a 6-speed. You guys are dubious apparently, but I feel like for 9800, if you could negotiate down, this would be.
Yeah, I would totally give that to you. I think if you went in there and offered them 10 grand, yeah,
10 grand, 9800, yeah.
I like those. I didn't love them. Though they did have the Polestar version in Europe, I think. We couldn't get it in the U.S.
So I was actually looking this up. You could get it as a dealer-installed option in the U.S. So there are a handful of C30 Polestars, but not from the factory. You had to, like, the dealer would install it.
Okay.
But so they do exist, but Lord knows how many of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay.
Wait. Go back to that previous picture.
The cold air intake?
Oh, it's got the engine intake on it. Adult owned and never abused.
Still.
That's what that screams to me. Exactly. It's again, I want to be a little snarky, but I kind of can't. I was never a big fan of that.
I love that huge rear window. It's fun. I know it's just an S40 with the tail chopped off.
It just, I always thought it just had a little bit of an awkward look, but
it does, but awkward in a good way.
You know, I think it's a good choice overall. And I want to applaud everybody for not just going the default hatchback choice of a Volkswagen Golf, because I was totally expecting to see a Golf in here somewhere.
Boring.
It's sort of the cliche. Oh, the Golf is always the answer. I had a Mark II GTI. It was fun. I got it, but it's something that never really got me going.
Honestly, now, when I was going through through the various searches, I was shocked that you could not get a hatchback WRX for under 10 grand. I did not see a single one in the Northern Ohio region.
I'm not shocked at all. The Subies, they hold their value like nothing.
True. I would have thought you could get one for $9,500, but
you can, but it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like Billy's WRX with 200,000 miles. That's has nitrous fitted, but was never used.
Right.
Wink, wink. You know, that's the WRX you're going to find. And that's the WRX you're going to want. All right. Well,
you're up last.
My last one. Hopefully you guys don't hate me for this one because I think this is a legit
hatchback. Did you cheat again?
No.
You tell me. Because you don't see these very much, and I always liked them. I thought they
That's a hatchback. That's a five.
But it says sport back in the title.
Yeah.
Well, that's just dumb marketing stuff.
You're fine.
So this is a 2010 Mitsubishi Lancer Sportback GTS. I always liked the looks of this generation Lancer and the Evo. And then when they came out with the Sportback, I thought, because I'm obviously a big hatchback fan. I like having the extra space in the back, not necessarily with a wagon, but I thought that these cars looked great. You don't see many of them on the road. I think Mitsubishis of this era are still quite reliable. The GTS, this had the 2.4 liter engine, which I think was 160-170 horse, somewhere around there.
It's right. It's 160 something.
It's not a fast car, but I think it looks stylish. I think it's fun to drive. I think it's going to be insanely practical. And it's going to be something that you don't see on the street every day. And I rather like that in a vehicle. I'd like having something that you don't see all over the place. And you know what? Mitsubishi, you know, their future is a little muddled right now, but this is sort of the end of an era with the Sportback. And look how much space you got back there.
Oh, yeah. That's plenty.
you drop those seats down and I'm hauling a washer or a dryer back there, just like the Mazda 6. Mm-hmm. And maybe this one won't break down quite as much.
Or if it does, it'll be cheaper to fix, I bet.
I totally bet it won't. I totally bet it won't. But no, that's, I mean, and it's well under 10 grand. It's $6,900. The trouble is trying to find these. This one, where was it? I think this one was over by Chicago as well. Where am I looking at it at? It's not telling me the location. No. This one is actually legit close to me. This is down in Colorado. This is about probably about a 5-hour drive for me. So
it's not bad.
Every time I see a cool Mitsubishi, I always just feel bad for the current Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not wrong there.
Yeah.
Now I want to say that these were offered in an all-wheel drive trim as well. This one's front-wheel drive. I don't know that for sure though. I can't remember.
I think you might be right.
I just remember when these came out, and I also thought there was a turbo version that was sort of like an Evo Lite. Mm-hmm. You know, not anywhere near as hardcore as an Evo, but with a little bit more oomph. But I don't know that for sure. Any Mitsubishi fans out there listening, comment or email podcast@motorone.com to educate all of us here on the Lancer Sportback.
That's right.
This is the GTS model. And that's my second, a little bit more practical, a little bit more proper choice, I guess, for a hatchback.
I think that generation of Lancer Evo is still one of my favorite looking cars. I just think that thing lines up so perfectly with the wheels and the stance and the wing. And it's great.
It does. And the values that those cars are holding says you're not wrong. A lot of people feel that way. Those cars, you will never, they're probably at the cheapest now that they're ever going to be. And you'll still pay 15 grand, 15, 20 grand for one.
Yep.
Did either of you guys have a super interesting third pick? Because I know we all prepared a couple of cars. Is there just something super interesting you want to share, or should we call it a night?
I don't have anything personally, although I did come across, this was a couple weeks ago, and I was trying to find it, and I couldn't. I came across a 1989 Ford Escort GT.
Oh yeah.
That was like mint. Like somebody put it in their garage and it had, I think, like 20 or 30,000 miles on it. It looked fantastic. And I think it was going for like 7 or 8 grand, which is crazy for an 89 Escort GT
car, but with our $10,000 budget is fine.
And you will not find another Escort GT like that. I had a 90 Escort GT as a winter beater that I absolutely adored. And I saw that car and I was just like, you just don't see those very much.
Jeff, so that's my only interesting one. You want to share super quick?
I had a weird one come to mind when I was looking. Chevy Cruze hatch. Gen, the current gen, whatever. I thought those looked
pretty good.
They look great and they're great to drive, but I don't remember if you can get them in a diesel or not. I was looking for the diesel, but I couldn't find it because I remember the Equinox diesel was really good.
You were looking for a Cruze diesel? Oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
You should have warned me before I took a drink of my non-alcoholic beverage there.
Here, those super cool. Quick. Here was the CRZ that I found. Mine was 7 grand. It's white. It's in Marysville, the home of Hondas in Ohio. 153,000 miles. But again, just like yours, these things, and I saw plenty more, they're readily available for under 10 grand if that's what you want. Yeah. So super quick.
Well, there's some actual decent advice for listeners. If you're looking for something practical, fun, under 10 grand, there are a few choices for you. Minus one, maybe.
Yeah. Jeff, where can people follow you, find you, stuff like that? Do you have any social medias, anything like that you would want to share with the folks?
Yeah, I do have social medias. You can follow me at Not a Boat Captain on Twitter or Instagram, or you can DM me on the Motor One Instagram. I'm always on there. I'm always online.
And that's just Motor One, not Motor One Com or anything like that.
Motor One Com.
Motor One Com. Sorry.
Instagram. Yeah. There's another one. Don't message that guy.
Yeah. Don't do that one. Motor One Com for Instagram.
I apologize.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, I mean, thanks for joining us. And it's been way too long. We got to have you back more often. We got to have everybody back more often.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, always fun. Smith, where can the folks find you?
CH Writing at CH Writing on Twitter. I don't really do Instagram, but I'm doing a lot more on Twitter. So I'm going to be posting up some more of my cars that I've had over the many years of various ownerships. And occasionally I put up some cat photos because why not?
Scarlett's a pretty cat.
And she can be very fussy.
And Jeff has a very pretty bunny.
Oh, yeah. I post a lot of pictures of him. Pictures? Oh, yeah. All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see bunny photos.
Yeah. Cool. He's super photographable.
So we've got bunny, we've got cat, and then we've got Cooper. We got
Corky. Yeah. I can see him sleeping on a pillow right now.
Well, Bruce, where do people follow you at?
That is Chris Bruce, 1985 on Twitter. Technically, I do have an Instagram. It is autowriter227. I have never posted anything there. So don't bother following.
Because so I'm going to go there. I didn't even know about that one. So I'm going to go there and
I technically have. I've never posted anything there. But yeah, as always, thanks for everyone who's listening. Good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to be listening to us, we appreciate it. The email is podcast@motorone.com. The YouTube is Motor One Podcasts. You can find us there. Also, every Friday, generally right around 10 a.m., you'll see the post pop up, maybe a little bit later, maybe a little bit earlier, but right around then. And you can comment to us at any of those spots. Smith, you've been doing a lot more comments recently. I wasn't able to get to comments until today. So if you commented earlier in the week to either YouTube or on the Motor One site, check back there because I commented about that stuff today. Just had a busy weekend. But yeah, we both try to respond as much as possible to that stuff. Didn't get any emails this week, like I said. So Motor One Podcasts. And if you've listened this far, if you got this far, just subscribe to us.
You need to clearly like us. You're at the end of you're at the end of the program. So yeah. Like, subscribe, whatever platform you're on. Our audience is growing steadily and we're super stoked about that.
Super strong steadily is what I would call it. Yeah.
We want to keep going and we want to bring you along for the ride.
Yeah. All right. And bye everybody.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.